Now, on the agenda for today, I'm going to go over a slight intro on what cloud computing is. Cloud computing is for those who aren't aware what cloud computing is. I'm going to give you an introduction on virtual machines, the typical workload options that you have here, and how to manage these environments, and some hybrid scenarios. Of course, if you get other questions, do feel free to send them by mail or by Twitter, or you're in the chat window, as stated earlier. So, if we're talking about cloud, we basically go about a lot of patterns that we can see in cloud environments. Cloud is both a public and a private matter. And if we're talking about public and private cloud, we mostly talk about the economical deal behind it, and nothing more than that. So you can have a public cloud, which is in your own data center, and you can have a private cloud, which is in the Windows Azure platform, for instance. It perfectly makes sense. Now, the scenarios that you basically see are the four here mentioned on this slide. You get the on and off scenario. And this is for predictable scenarios that you need a basic workload for a period of time. If you have a fast-growing scenario, like for instance you have a website, let's say you create your own Facebook, then this would be basically the scenario that you're aiming for, because you of course want to grow with your website, and you want to make sure that you can follow with your infrastructure on this growth. Yeah. Do note that these patterns do not only apply to websites, but also apply to things like storage and other things that you have basically in your infrastructure environment. Yeah. If we talk about unpredictable bursting, a good scenario there is always the example of a website like CNN, which need to make sure that they can cope with burstings when there's a certain news fact going on, like the inauguration day of the king today in Holland, for instance, or the Boston bombing, or things like that. Yeah, we don't want to be reminded of those facts, but that's the kind of unpredictable bursting that you can cope with in that kind of scenario. The predictable bursting is a typical scenario of a workload that you can have, like for instance, end of the month payments in your company. If you get a server which needs a lot of calculations to be done on your employees' payment slips, well, this is the predictable bursting that you have every month. So you're sure that you need to cope with enough infrastructure to make sure that you have these calculations at the end of the month. Now, basically, we talk about cloud computing in three different settings. You get the infrastructure as a service, which is IaaS for short. You get which is basically hosting of your own environment. You have platform as a service, which is the building of your own environment of something on a platform that is delivered to you. And you get software as a service, which is software that you rent. Most of the time, you just consume these things. Good examples on these are for IaaS, or for instance, the Windows Azure Virtual Machines. For the PaaS, you get the cloud services that you have in the Windows Azure platform. And for SaaS, like for instance, you have Office 365, which is a good example for a consumer product. Now, the difference between these platforms lie actually in the management of things. On where do you take responsibility. If you have a packaged software, if you run it in your own data center, most of the time you're responsible for everything. If you go over to the infrastructure as a service, the only thing that you need to provide is your operating system, your middleware, and your runtimes and your applications, and everything underneath that, like the virtualization layer and the hypervisor and the networking, and all these things that supply that infrastructure are managed for you. Most of the time, these are hosters that are doing this for you. If we're talking about a platform as a service, it's you who are responsible for the applications and for the data managed on that layer. Yeah? Everything else is managed for you and can be configured most of the time to your needs. If we're talking about software as a service, everything is managed for you, like updates and upgrades of the environment, but you also have some configuration that you can do on your own environment in your software as a service. Now, we're going to talk about the IaaS part today, which is basically virtual networking and virtual machines. Don't forget that Windows Azure is a flexible and open platform, managed all over the world globally, based in 8 data centers all over the world, which are at your disposal. Yeah. It's solid. It's a solid platform. It's based on Microsoft best practice operating systems. So that's it. It's probably the best thing you know from your own data center is implemented there. Now, if we're talking about virtual machines, we can now say that since the infrastructure as a service general availability since last week announced on the announcement by Scott Guthrie last week, we can say that we now have new instances and new instance sizes. And there's a new price setting for that. You can see them in this slide. The most important thing is that you have that we're going from t-shirt sizes now to the A7 and the A8 sizes. We can have extra small, which are still shared core, instances, ranging to the A8, which is the Rolls-Royce among the virtual machines, which has a nifty 56 gigabyte of memory and 8 cores. So that way you can have your own flavor in virtual machine sizes based on your needs and on your load. Now, if we're running virtual machines, what's included in this pricing? Because as you can see, there's some pricing in there. If you go over it again, if you pay like 2 cents an hour, what's in there if we run a virtual machine? Well, if it's a Windows server provisioned through the portal itself, you get a per hour license that is included. There's a select few applications that are running per hour licenses, like for instance SQL Server or BizTalk. I will show you that in a minute. But all the others are basically with application license mobility. So if you get a software assurance on your licensing, or you get a license plan by Microsoft and you get software assurance, then you're probably covered by application license mobility. So it allows you to bring your own license into the cloud. For all the external applications, well, that's based upon vendor and product. So that way you need to make sure that your applications are allowed to be virtualized or allowed to be put in a data center or deployed as many times as you are allowed. Now, talking about virtual machines. If we go over the workflow in the virtual machine flow, you can get started through 3 ways. You can either go through the management portal, you can go through scripting, or you can go through the REST API, which is more a development style way of provisioning your virtual machines. From there out, you select the image and the VM size that you would like to support, that you would like to have, and then you go to the new disk and your persistent storage. Now, what's available in the portal as a flavor of gallery images, if you're not provisioning your own VHDs or not provisioning your own images, you get a wide variety of choice. You get all the Microsoft operating systems and application servers available, like Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012. But you also have support for SQL Server 2012, BizTalk Server supported as a license, and SharePoint 2013, which is available as a trial. On the open source side, which is widely adopted and widely embraced by Microsoft also as a hoster, you can have the choice between OpenSUSE and some other of the open source Linux distributions. So as you can see, there's a wide variety of open source supported on this platform, which is actually a good thing. So we're not limited only to Windows environments, but if you're a PHP developer on Linux, for instance, or if you want to run your Ubuntu server or a Drupal server, we can fully comply with that. And you can, as with anything else, you can bring your own VHDs with your own OS into the cloud. But at a certain risk. Now, how does this work? If you want to put your VM in the cloud, you can easily do that. You can easily take your own VHD and upload it, sysprep it, and put the image into the Windows Azure platform. But you can also do it the other way around. You can create your virtual machines into the cloud, and you can then download them into your own data center, host them over there, because they are all based on the same virtual hard disk format, which is still not the VHDX format, which we know now widely available in Windows Server 2012, but still the VHD. So VHDX format is still not supported. It may come in the future sometime, I don't know. But just to make sure that you understand that you only have support for VHD at this time. Now, does that mean that you're limited to that? No. If you have VHD support from other service providers, you can easily have a migration from Windows Azure to the other service provider, or the other way around. So that way you're not locked in to the you're not locked into the real Windows Azure platform, so you still have the freedom of mobility in your own data center choice. So that way, if you have another service provider who supports VHD, you want to move away from that one and go to Windows Azure, or you want to move away from your data center to Windows Azure and then away from that one, it's still basically possible. Now, VM virtual machines are not the same as the, for those who are aware of the other services within the Windows Azure platform, are not the same as cloud service virtual machines or instances. These come with persistent drives. So the cloud services are not persistent, but VMs are persistent. And there's an advantage there that every virtual machine that is has a persistent drive is replicated 3 times for your own security. So that way, if there's a fault somewhere, the backup will kick in, and you have high availability. So that way, your VM will be assured of availability. And of course, you can have this geo-replicated. So that means we can Microsoft has the ability to move your VMs between the different data centers all over the world to make sure that your VMs are available all over the world, even in case of failure. So it's a continuous storage product. Now, let's get the demo. So if you're going to go to the portal, I'm just going to go basically over what the virtual machines are looking like and what you can do with it. Yeah. So if you go to the portal and you log in to a Windows Azure account, of course you first need to subscribe. So if you don't have one, please have a trial first, so that way you can see if Windows Azure is at your measurement. What you can do is you can basically go to the virtual machine stack. From there out, you can create a new virtual machine. Yeah. So if you're going to take a look at the virtual machine gallery, for instance, you see the entire flavor and the entire range of flavors that you have at your disposal. So what you have here is you get your Windows platform images, These are all the Windows 2012, 2008 images. But you also have SQL Server in different flavors. You also have Bistalk, SharePoint, which is still in a trial. There's a Bistalk evaluation, and you have some Linux distributions. What you can also have, if you want to create a new virtual machine, you can go to the, like for instance, if you want to go to an open source virtual machine, you can also create a virtual machine from an existing image, as you can see here. But you can also go to the VM depot, which allows you to have some pre-filled VMs to be uploaded in Windows Azure. Like for instance, if you're looking for a Drupal environment, you can easily say, I want to provision myself a Drupal environment, a basic Drupal environment, and I want to publish this to my Windows Azure account. I'm going to go. You can also go to the depot website from there out, which allows you to create a deployment script for your region, which you can then run through the client tools. So that way you can go through the Windows Azure client tools and just create using this script by saying that I want this image to be used to be published. On the other hand, you can also publish your own images from the from this website. So if you want to share open source image, you can easily publish it from this website to the Windows Azure VM Depot. What basically happens then is that you set where the image region will be located. So for ease of use, you take it the region as close as possible for the proximity for your users. Yeah. You pick a storage account. If you don't have one, you create one, because that's where the image will be stored. Go next, and then the image will be copied from the VM depot to the images library. Once that is done, because this can take a while, because the images are at least 30 gigabytes in space, so you have some traffic going on there. Once that is done, you get an image like this one, which you still need to register in your image library. So if you go to the creation page again, I'll show you in my images, the Drupal isn't there yet. If I close this again, press now register. It will start registering it. Then when that's done, the image will become available, and then you can choose it from the gallery as an available image, so that way you can start using it and provision your virtual machine. For the Windows virtual machines, it's the same thing. You just can go through a quick create and give yourself a DNS name, so for the availability that you want. Let's say my tests MSDN demo VM. It's too long, so my Windows Azure is intelligent enough. My test VM 1. That one must be unique, I think. Already used. 2012. Yeah, that's still working. You can easily choose here, again, the choice of flavor. Let's say I want to go with a standard SQL Server SP1. You pick the size of your virtual machine. So as I explained earlier, the extra small is on a shared core, so that means you share with multiple machines the CPUs. So I basically go with a small for this one. That might be a little bit low for SQL Server, but still okay. I give the administrator user that I want to use, so you can choose which administrator user you want to use. I give a password. Choose the location again, and you create the virtual machine. So now, if I close this, it will be easier to see. Now my virtual machine will be started to be provisioned. So it basically prepares the image, it downloads it, it creates a virtual machine just like we have in Hyper-V. It works basically the same way. Once that's done, you can do basically anything with your virtual machine that you're used to, like you have in your own data center. So from here out, I can easily connect to my virtual machine. I can say I want to RDP into that one. Want to connect it. I'm going to go with my user account. And as you can see, I can now RDP into my virtual machine. Basically, I'm there. So I'm really inside my virtual machine. You can check anything you want, just like in a normal physical or virtualized machine in your own data center. As you can see, performance here, it's a 2.1 GHz CPU. I got 1.7, so this is a small instance. Another cool feature that you can have on your virtual machines is that you can easily attach disks to it, because storage is something that you most of the time are needy from. If you want to store data, or if you want to have a separate disk for your TimDBs, for instance, when you're running SQL Server. So from here out, you can easily attach a disk. You can have a physical disk which is already available in your disk library, or you can have an empty disk which you can just use for storage. Like for instance this one, I'm going to create an empty disk and I give it a size, let's say a gigabyte, which is a little bit too low, maybe I say 10. You can have some caching preferences on there, so that's also at your choice, which improves the performance of your drive or your operating system. And just basically create by clicking on the windows and on the buttons. It's now updating my virtual machine. The other one is still running. And once that's done, we can see that there will be an extra disk created here. If I can see it, it's not here yet. Not here yet. It will be placed there momentarily. So that way you can have multiple disks attached from out from within the portal. I'm going to leave this running for a second. What you can also do is from here out, you can create additional disks if you want to. If you go into the virtual machine itself, you get a lot of monitoring tools available. So you have the monitoring of CPU, disk, so the basic things that you want to monitor. You can also see the configuration of your machine here, and you can see immediately here which disks are assigned to your machine. Also the deployments, where it has been deployed, the IP addresses, which are very important, because you have two IP addresses. You get one for the public IP and get one for the internal IP. So that way, if you get virtual networking, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more later on, that you can use for the internal IPs. What you can also do is have some endpoint configuration. Now, for when you create a virtual machine, immediately an endpoint is created for remote desktoping, so that way you can start managing your environment immediately from the RDP sessions. You can also create your custom endpoints, like for instance if you get an IIS server that you want to install and you want to run your custom websites. For developers this is very easy, you just add the additional port on which you want to run the website. And you define also perhaps a port if you want to like deploy during using WebDeploy or something like that. You deploy, you provide the ports there that you want to use for that one. Another thing that you can do is you can scale out the machine, so that way you can have a bigger virtual machine size. You can do endpoint monitoring. You can put it in an availability set, on which I'm going to talk a little bit more later. So normally, if everything went well now, my virtual machine now has a additional disk. Let's see if we can connect to it. It's almost there. So I open up my. You see that it isn't there yet, so I now need to mount the availability of the disk. So if I do manage from here out, we go to the disk management. I go to lack of storage and go to the disk management. You will see that it will have created me. You will see that it created my additional drive here. So if I now do a new volume, I can go through the wizard and I can mount it easily. So that way, cramming resolution. Can go next. Assign the drive letter, so that way you can use it as storage. Probably almost there. It's not formatting the drive. Momentarily you will see it. Momentarily it will be displayed as extra drive. If you take a look now in the disk environment, normally you should, I'm not seeing it. You should be able to see the disk standing here. There it is, yep, it's this one. So that's the one that's attached to the website. I was looking over it there probably because we're standing underneath each other. So now that you see the volume has been created. So that's how easy you can add storage to your virtual machine. So that's how easy you can create virtual machines. You can of course do this through the means of PowerShell or the REST API, which I perhaps better show you too. In just a second. Some new stuff that was released also last week was the ability to customize the administrator username, so you don't need to have administrator anymore as a default user, for instance, but you can use your own immediately. Remote PowerShelling, for those who are into PowerShell and love to write scripts, you can immediately have remote PowerShell enabled by default, but it's optional. So you don't have to, but you can have it. Yeah. Also for the Linux environment, there's immediately remote SSH available on that one. Before the general availability, we had the default disk size, which was 30 gigabytes. Now it's 127 gigabytes, which is the maximum VHD supported size on Windows Azure. Good. Maybe perhaps just another demo on the PowerShell. Environments, so you can easily have some controls to create your virtual machines or to get your virtual machines. So for instance, if I do git Azure VM, I can immediately list for my subscription all the VMs that I'm running into my subscription. If my network is not lagging, it will show up. There you go. So you see all the VMs that I'm running in my cloud environment. Yeah. I can, for instance, easily create a new virtual machine. For that, I just created a little script here, so that way I don't have to type. I will go over it with you. So what you can do is just do a new quick VM. You place it on the Windows environment. You create your service name, which is your DNS name. You have your full Windows name. You put an administrator user, which in this case is Ike. I put a password in there. I will delete this virtual machine afterwards. I use the image name, which you can also list from the PowerShell tooling. You get a complete list of all the images available from the gallery, and you set the location. And if I then do enter, you will see that the operation will be beginning momentarily, and that after the I've tested this earlier, and my service name still exists. So when I do this, I delete this one, and that won't be an issue anymore. Let's try that again. Luckily, that goes fast enough. So if I do this now again, it will go through and create my new quick VM in the background. So if I now go and check on the virtual machines, it will create me a disk for that somewhere momentarily. Too fast on this one. It's still creating the deployment, but in a second it will show up, and then you can see here it is. So here's the disk that's already created, and it will start creating my virtual machine in the background. So basically the same thing, but all managed through PowerShell. So that way you can create complete scripting of your environment in one script, and you can also, by immediately using remote PowerShell capabilities, you can also immediately start installing your Windows Server feature and things like that. If we talk about availability, well, Microsoft guarantees a 99.95% for multiple role instances. So that basically comes down to a 38 hour downtime per year. This means that it's based on computer hardware failure, so disk, so basically every hardware on which your VM runs, but also data center failures, like network failure and power failure, but it could also be due to hardware upgrade or software maintenance. Then again, what's not included in that is the VM container crashes or the guest OS updates, because for that you're responsible yourself. Of course, you need to create an availability seat. So if you only have one virtual machine and that machine crashes completely, you're up to your own, of course, to maintain that availability yourself. When we talk about availability, you also talk about fault domains and update domains. So a fault domain is where you put your servers in the same a fault domain represents a group of resources that you don't want to fail together. So that way, if one fails, the others that are aligned to that one will be taken over to another environment together. So that means if you have one server crashing and you have other servers who are dependent on that one, they should go over to the same fault domain. If we're talking about update domains, that means that you always have an availability, and they will be updated together. So that way you still have one domain running and the other domain will be updated, and then when the update has been done, the other domain will become available if it hasn't crashed for some reason, and the other domain which hasn't been updated yet will start the update. The fabric controller makes sure that all these things work as a charm. And it's the entire Windows Azure platform who takes care of these things. A best example here is that you have, for instance, rep roles and worker roles, but these basically go back to the cloud services, but it's comparable to that. That means that you have lots of instances on one. We are updating them in one rack, and if they're done, we go over to the other rack. So that way, you always have service availability on your site. So if we go to the, if one domain fails for the default domains, for instance, the other domain will take over completely. If you look at it in the perspective of, like, for instance, virtual machines, you have the same basic principle. So basically, you can see it as a complete rack that is available to you, as you can see here. Also, there is you have your high availability, so that means you get load balancing and redundancy at every level. So that way, if one of the roles fail, the other one will take over immediately on every level. So that way, if your rep roles fails, the other one will take over, but your SQL servers are still there. That doesn't mean that they have to go over also. Now, if we talk about workload on the virtual machines, we have a lot of possibilities available at our fingertips. We talked about this earlier. You get support for SQL Server, you get support for SharePoint. There's a complete farming guide on SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint 2010 available on the MSDN web pages. Also for clustering of Windows servers and stuff like that, these scenarios are also supported. BizTalk, same thing, also a system center. If we talk about hybrid scenarios, we can talk about four things basically: identity, virtualization, management, and development. If we take a look at identity, you can easily deploy a Windows Active Directory, or you can make use of the Windows Azure Active Directory in order to make sure that your identities are shared among the public and the private cloud that you have. So within your own data center on-premise and in the Windows Azure data center, you can share resources on your identity service. So that way, people can log in on your applications running in your VMs with the same identity without having the hassle of having multiple users. If we talk about virtualization, we already touched it a little bit. You can go from your traditional data center to your home hoster in either a private or a public scenario, and you can move between them. If we're talking about management, you get your system center or other management tools that you know, which you can manage both environments at the same time. And for development, which is a little bit different for most IT pros, is that you can deploy to all these scenarios at the same way you use the other deployment scenarios. Whether you're deploying in your own data center or deploying in Windows Azure, the principles stay the same. You get your same application lifecycle management tools, you get your same software delivery cycles. It's just a different working environment. It's physically. It's for the rest, everything stays the same. If you apply the same rules in your private data center, you can apply the same rules in the Windows Azure store. If we're talking about hybrid solutions, we got a lot of possibilities which support hybrid scenarios. Yeah? If we talk about virtual machines, the ones that spin up immediately are the site-to-site network VPNs through Windows Azure Virtual Networking. But you also have some other scenarios like SQL Data Sync, the service bus for your connectivity and messaging features, and which is probably to be removed, the Windows Azure Connect, which is a machine-to-machine connectivity, so which allows you to connect into machines. This is probably to be replaced by the last week announced scenario of the point-to-site VPN support within the virtual network stack. So you can now, when you create a virtual network, you can easily configure it as a point-to-site VPN, which allows you to have a soft VPN available, so you don't need a gateway anymore. You can easily have a software VPN now, or you can have a site-to-site VPN. How does this work? Well, you can either have gateways or VPN devices or gateway devices available, or you can have a virtual, you can have virtually any device connecting to your virtual network in the cloud by either remote workers or a normal PC inside your on-premises network. So that way, people can go easily through a tunnel and they have an immediately connection to the cloud. Support there is also for SSTP and RS. So that way you can easily connect through firewalls. There's no firewall blocking anymore, so people can easily go to that environment without any hassle. Windows 7, Windows 8 is fully supported on that thing, so you can easily create a VPN connection to the Windows Azure environment. So if you go over the networking capabilities, where can you find all these things? So I'll go back to my desktop. Down here, let me just try something. This will be a lot better that way. Down here you can have the networking component in the portal. You can create your virtual network, you can add an additional local network, and you can add your own, you can bring your own DNS servers. So if you create now a new virtual network, you can either do this through the wizard by a quick create, a custom create, or an import configuration if you already have a networking component available. You can even register your own DNS servers from here out. If you go to the custom create, what you need to do is you give in a name. I call this my cloud network. Oops. Still not that open. Apparently I have my shift key available. I create a new affinity group of the machineries that I want to have to base together. I place my region of deployment, again for proximity, this is important. If you're running cross data centers, then you have a little bit more work. I give this an affinity group name. And then you can either provide your own DNS server, or you can have the Windows Azure DNS kick in, which allows you also to get IPs from the Windows Azure environment. And here you have the immediately see the point-to-site connectivity features that you can have. So what you can do here, as you can see, it allows you up to 256 addresses to connect from outside. And the subnet must be in your own address space. Or you can choose for the site-to-site connectivity, which is which allows you to connect on-premise and off-premise. You then add the address space of the virtual network address space, you can have either through the count or through the CIDR, which you prefer most for your own configuration. You can add multiple subnets, you can add an additional address space, and if you then connect, it allows you to create one. And then you can start exporting it, whether you want to, which you can then use to import into your own virtual into your own gateways on-prem. Don't forget, for now, only Juniper and some Cisco devices are supported. But more support will come in the future, near or far future. I can't tell you that. That doesn't mean that you can't try any others. It's just the support that's not there. I've seen cases where Forefront UAGs have been enabled. I've seen cases where they've tried with checkpoint firewalls. So there's possibility for others, even software firewalls and gateways. So if your device isn't there, you can still try to get it working, and perhaps you're lucky that it is working. But for now, only the support is really being put on Cisco devices and Juniper devices. And of course, with the point-to-site VPN, you have the soft device, which you can have on your own PC. So that's basically supported without any hassle. Will there be more afterwards? My guess is as good as mine. Your guess is as good as mine. Right. Again, you can have your local networks that you can attach, which you can also export to a format and the DNS service if you want to bring your multiple DNS service and naming a service, you can easily import them here. Right. Another support, a widely common supported scenario is the running your Active Directory. Because most of the time what you want to do is you want to have your devices on-prem and off-prem with the same users and security and policies. So that way you can go through a VPN tunnel and support your AD running like that. So that way, every scenario that you have on-prem can also be done in the virtual network stack that you have in Windows Azure. You can have your secondary domain controllers or backup domain controllers there. You can have read-only domain controllers. So every scenario that's supported in the on-prem scenario is also supported in the virtual network stack of Windows Azure. There's also the Windows Azure Active Directory. If you want to know more about that, I advise you to read the Windows Azure website on that, because that has a little bit different side to that. So it's not the same. Okay, that way you can implement other factors like Office 365 and things like that, and you can run your custom domains through the Windows Azure Active Directory stack. When it comes to management skills, we're almost there now. When it comes to management skills, you have a multitude of choice, whether it's either pure in the cloud or whether it's in the hybrid scenarios. You can have scenarios where you can have management through existing tools like Windows Intune and through your servers, and then going over Windows System Center Configuration Manager, or SCOM, which you also have availability of. As you can see here, so you can easily cover with SCOM your IaaS components as with your PaaS components, so you can easily monitor your cloud services and your virtual machines from within the environment that you know best. Of course, if you are looking for it's again a nice slide on the possibilities. So you can have movement for your virtual machines with VMM, Virtual Machine Manager. The management with data data protection manager it is. Yeah, data protection manager. You can have operations through system center advisor, things like that. So you can monitor with all the tools that you really know. Speaking of data protection manager, there's also now the availability of backup vault. I know it isn't mentioned anywhere in the slides, but it also works in your Azure components. So that way you just install the agent there, you create a vault, and you can backup your cloud VMs the same way as you backup your on-prem VMs or your on-prem hardware. When it comes to capabilities in scripting, I see that I forgot to remove, this is the wrong slide. basically, it should have been full support for the Windows PowerShell. I don't know why it's... Yeah, okay, no, it's okay. You can provision, you can import and export VM settings. So you can all do that through script. As I showed earlier, it was very easy to create and provision a virtual machine from within a PowerShell. There's also cross scripting capabilities with the client tools. So if you want client tools manageability from Apple devices, for instance, you can. You can easily do that from within an Apple device also. Yeah. I advise you to take a look at the Windows Azure site and go and download the client tools, the cross-platform client tools. PowerShell, so automation is there, provisioning is there, virtual networking can be completely managed through PowerShell. You can do other stuff once you've remoted into the machine, so that way everything you know from the on-prem scenario is still the same. This I went over it. So provisioning, I've already demoed you that. Basic things you need to know is that you first need to go and make sure that your subscription is configured on your PC. So that the certificates are downloaded and the publishing profile is downloaded. That can also be done through the PowerShell commands, which I can show you very quickly. I still have a few minutes left, so maybe it's not bad to show that also. So what you can do is get Azure publishing settings file. What it basically does, it opens you a website where it will download your profile settings. I need to have a different account, so I need to log in here. Come on. Go to the. No. Apparently, my num lock is disabled. Oh. Then gives me the availability to download my publishing file. Come on. Signing in. Oh yeah, I know how that comes. That's one of the disadvantages of running on Windows 8 if you have a Live ID coupled, which is different for your management of Windows Azure. Sometimes it gives you an issue. You just have to take my word for it. It will download a file, and what you then can do is you do an import of that file. My import Azure publishing settings file. You point to that file, and it will automatically provide you with all the correct settings. If you then take a look at the Azure subscription, subscription name, oh no, it says sets, I need to do a get. You can see immediately all the settings that you have downloaded. You can see your service endpoint that you need to use for the management. You can see your storage account that you have as a default storage account. You can have multiple storage accounts available, as you know. You can also see all the tools that you're using, your subscription name, your subscription ID. So that way that you identify your subscription. And from there you can take a look at all the capabilities that your virtual machines can have in the cloud. So again, if I do get Azure VM, you will see all the VMs that I provisioned earlier to the portal or to PowerShell, so that way you can start managing from there on. All right. That being said, as you can see, Windows Azure has a lot of capabilities for virtual machines and virtual networking. If you want to try it yourself, please go to the website and trial, or you can go through an MSDN account, which also comes with some hours of Windows Azure availability. The only thing you need to do is to activate it with your credit card, but you will not be billed for it unless you go over the amount of hours and you remove the spending limit on that one. You can see that's easily integratable with your on-prem scenario. You had a lot of management capability available in the multitude of tooling, the tools that you know, so you don't need to learn anything new, and that's basically the message that I want to give here. That's very easy to do. So that way, if you want to have your virtual machines managed through scripting or through the portal or any way you want, you can easily do that. If you want to take them in your own environment, no issue there, just download the VHDs and put them in your own environment on-prem or in another hosted if you're willing to do that, if you think that might be a better ID, or for whatever reason you may think it's a better idea to move away from Windows Azure.